Today on Athens News Matters, Athens-Clark County Commissioner Carol Myers joins us to talk about the county's budget and her experiences as a first-term commissioner.
Because of COVID and that we're having all these meetings online, to really sort of feel like local government is the 10 commissioners, a couple of staff, the county manager, and the mayor, and we're all on Hollywood Squares.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. Also today, part two of our series on colorism and hairism.
Discrimination based on your skin color or colorism is connected to so many aspects at the structural level.
Those stories, our panel on the weekend news and more, coming up on Athens News Matters.
Hours ago, halfway around the world, the day has already begun.
Tens of thousands of people in Venezuela.
Britain is leaving the European Union.
Everyone was just running. People were crying. They were in tears. And we didn't know what was happening. Police kept telling us to move back, move back.
The thousands of protesters marched along a route.
When you need to know where the world went while you weren't looking. Morning Edition. Listen every morning.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. Joining us today is Carol Myers. She was sworn into office in January to represent the 8th District here in Athens. Carol, thanks for stopping by today.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here.
Well, let's just begin by talking about how your first few months have been on the commission.
Well, it's incredibly exciting and incredibly busy. I was involved in local government in different ways, so I knew a little bit about what I'm coming into, but the pace is the pace is pretty constant, keeping me on my toes, giving me lots of opportunity to learn things and make a difference in different places.
Well, you know, last week we had Commissioner Mariah Parker on the show to talk about, among other things, the budget process. So where in that process are we from your perspective, and what can residents expect in the coming weeks?
May is budget month, and as a new commissioner, it's something that I'm learning a lot about as well. In fact, I'm going to dedicate a big part of my newsletter this coming month to the budget as I learn about it. Mm. So we have several meetings. They're all posted online. So we have a very busy meeting schedule, and people can watch that online. I like to listen to those YouTubes of other committee meetings while I'm working on dinner. So they can do that and communicate with their commissioners that way. There's also one of those community talks that Mayor Gertz has been doing, and he just posted that on Monday. I would definitely have people look for that and listen to that, because he gives a great summary of where the budget is going and what the emphasis will be this year.
Great. Well, what are some of the issues that you personally are looking to focus on in your coming term as commissioner within your district?
Within my district, I'm very excited about one thing. That's Mayor Gertz just announced this last night, the formation of a site selection committee for an East Side Public Library, and I'll be chairing that. So that's one of the very exciting things that's going on the East Side. We don't really have a community center, and I see the library and potentially a youth center that's also going to be built on the East Side sometime being a real sort of central place and serving as a placemaking infrastructure project for us on the East Side. So that's one of the most exciting things going on.
In the past, and in your platform, speaking of the East Side, you talked about how supporting those constituents in East Athens are particularly important to you. Can you talk a little bit about why that is, and what does that support look like?
You know, it's very easy right now, especially because of COVID and that we're having all these meetings online, to really sort of feel like local government is the 10 commissioners, a couple of staff, the county manager and the mayor, and we're all on Hollywood Squares. But really there's, there's all the residents of the East Side. And so one of the things it looks to me to is really important for me is to be able to communicate with them. I have a background in education and teaching over at Athens Tech. And so I'm working hard on putting together a monthly newsletter that gets out to people and kind of gives them the highlights of what's been going on in the local government. I'm also trying my best to be very responsive to email. And that's, you know, that's a primary way that one hears from constituents on whether they live in District 8 or other places. And I think it's important for them to feel that their voices are heard and listened to. And then there are the, you know, there's the, I just got a message last night via Facebook about a little, I don't know, someplace where the road is falling in over in, you know, Cedar Creek, a little sinkhole, you know, so you have to kind of keep your eyes on social media in different places because people are communicating in so many different ways these days.
Carol Myers represents District 8 here in Athens-Clark County. Commissioner, thanks so much for stopping by Athens News Matters today.
Oh, thank you so much. And hey, there's one little thing I want to encourage people to do. There's a wonderful clean energy plan survey that our sustainability office has out right now, and we need your feedback. So if you do a search at the ACC.gov website for the sustainability office and then scroll down, there's that survey down there. So I encourage people to get out there and get involved.
Right now, less than 10% of Georgia's electricity is fueled by renewable resources, putting us behind the pack in terms of states transitioning to clean energy. But a new report shows that the gusty winds off Georgia's coast could be providing a lot more energy. Jeanette Geyer is director of Environment Georgia. We spoke earlier about the report. And Jeanette, tell me a little bit about this new report on Georgia's wind energy potential. What did the report show?
That's right. We released a new report that takes data using the latest technology in offshore wind energy and looks at all the different things going on our coast and estimates how much electricity we could produce with offshore wind energy. And we found that Georgia could more than meet its demand, 2019 electricity demands. And if we were to convert everything in our economy to electricity, we would meet almost half of our electrical demand by 2050. So there's a huge amount of wind blowing off the coast of Georgia that could be used to power our state with clean and renewable energy.
Nice to be a coastal state.
Right. And, you know, we don't have a huge coast, so it's even more impressive to think.
Right.
With 100 miles of coastline, we could generate such an impressive amount of energy and could power our state basically with clean and renewable electricity.
I personally think we should be on the Gulf. I think Florida, the panhandle should be part of Georgia, but, you know, just so we can have a little Gulf access as well. Right. But so, Jeanette, tell me, what kind of a difference can this make? I mean, you just spouted off some impressive numbers right there.
Right. So right now, a large percentage of Georgia's electricity comes from dirty sources, from coal-fired power plants, from gas, from nuclear power. And imagine if we were to convert all of that into things like offshore wind and solar power, we would be a much cleaner state. Our air would be cleaner. We wouldn't use gas. We wouldn't use coal. We wouldn't use nuclear energy. We'd use offshore winds and solar power. And just imagine how much cleaner our air would be. We wouldn't be contributing to climate change. So Georgia could really be contributing to climate solutions rather than being part of the problem.
Right. And how could this affect consumers if Georgia could harvest the wind?
Well, the nice thing about solar power and wind power is the fuel that you are using and tapping into is free. So rather than having to import and buy coal or gas or uranium to run your nuclear power plant, you could rely on clean and renewable energy. Obviously, you would need to have some sort of investment to build those wind turbines or the solar power. And so our report has a number of recommendations that will help make that possible. And one of the things that we really call on Georgia to do is to set some sort of goal, make some sort of commitment, and then work with our sister states. So there are some really great examples of, for example, Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, all working together to figure out how they're going to make offshore wind a reality, and Georgia is being left behind.
And we don't want to be left behind.
Absolutely not.
Not in this. So you touched on this a little bit, but what would you say the potential initial costs are versus long-term benefits?
I mean, I guess what I would go back to is the really nice thing about offshore wind is you don't have to pay for the wind. It will continue to blow and be free. And so after you make that upfront investment in the technology, in the infrastructure, you will have a free power source for decades.
And I'm sure this is being, as you said, utilized in other states, and I'm sure other countries are seeing tremendous benefits from using wind energy.
Yes. The bottom line is America is not leading the charge on clean and renewable offshore wind. There are other countries in Asia, in Europe, that are doubling down on offshore winds and have big plans. And we are right now being left behind, although there are some really bright spots further up the Atlantic coast of states really making big commitments that I think will help to jumpstart this economy.
Thank you so much for this, Jeanette.
Great.
Jeanette Geyer is Director of Environment Georgia.
I'm James Menendez. In a time of fast-developing news and headlines, NewsHour is there to help you make sense of a complex world.
This is an historic victory in what is a very important day.
This could change world history.
Everybody's going to pay a price. He will, everybody will.
And I am just so happy to be home and to put my feet on this land again.
Again, another huge development.
That's NewsHour from the BBC.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley. Governor Brian Kemp visited the Texas border with Mexico this past week, where he took a boat tour of the Rio Grande, met with Texas Governor Greg Abbott, and visited a section of the border wall constructed during the Trump administration. Here to talk about that, plus the rest of the weekend news, are Gwen O'Looney from WXAG and Blake Odd from Flagpole. So we're going to start with the governor. He pitched himself as an immigration hawk last election cycle. Do you think this visit tells us anything about his strategy going into 2022?
First of all, I'm not even sure that he went to the border. I saw the pictures, and the Rio Grande looks suspiciously like the Broad River to me. there have been a lot of jokes made about this. I mean, did he take a wrong turn on the way to the Chattahoochee? You know, supposedly the reason for his visit was that he was going down there to check on the National Guardsmen from Georgia who are serving on the border. But, I mean, clearly this is a political move. And, you know, he's trying to shore up his base. And he went down there and he had a photo op. And that's really about it.
It's an embarrassing political stunt, I think. His approval rates have plunged. He's trying to fan the fears of his base. He's clinging to the worst of his party's far-right wing. I don't think that's going to serve him well. I just don't see it giving him that much mileage at all in Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, he got ratioed pretty hard on Twitter over that. But again, this is for the base, you know, I mean, this is not him reaching out to swing voters or anything like that. You know, this is him shoring up. I mean, he's taken a lot of hits in regards to the election results and all the lies about voter fraud and everything like that. You know, he's got a lot of criticism from the right and Trump abandoned him and threw him under the bus. So he's got a lot of work to do to fix that, to shore up his base.
You know, the other thing about this that we can't ignore is the fact that this is that same law enforcement approach, but they're trying to make this border problem into a terrorism, human trafficking. This is just like him holding the gun all through his advertisements last time he ran for governor.
It is a lot like that. I mean, it's the same kind of visual too, you know. I mean, where you look at these, and it was a photo op. I mean, this is all about the photos, you know, and he's in all the photos, you know, he's wearing the Oakleys, and he's got the tactical vest on, you know, with all the pouches, and he's scowling at the camera, you know, trying to look intimidating. Like, you know, remember the commercial where, you know, he had his big pickup truck and he was going to round up a bunch of illegals and, you know, dump them off at the border.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of thing that he's going for.
Yep.
And I mean, it's sort of silly, but, you know, that's the image that he's trying to project.
Well, he also came back to Athens Wednesday, where he signed two bills at Southern Brewing Company. One of those will allow restaurants to sell cocktails to go with takeout meals, and another will make it easier for breweries and distilleries to expand their businesses. So how much can we expect these new laws to provide relief to the food and beverage industries?
You know, it'll probably do some good. It's a reasonable thing to do. I think if they'd done it last year, it would have been a much bigger help because now people are not getting to go as much as they were. You know, Kemp also lifted all of the restrictions on restaurants, so now they can be filled to capacity. And, you know, I mean, yeah, great. Probably would have helped a lot more if they'd done it a year ago, but sure.
The other thing about this that is interesting to me is the growth of Athens as a brewery site. You know, we have the new Athentic just opened right behind the old Walgreens, and that location, Terrapin, which is not a problem because it has an amphitheater, and Creature Comfort has the outdoor, but this Athentic has really built a huge venue over there right in the next to a residential area that you can certainly hear from our house. It'll be very interesting how that goes.
And the governor also signed another bill. It's House Bill 617, which obviously will impact people here in Athens since we're such a huge college sports town. And Gwen, I know you were particularly interested in this measure.
Under this bill, you know, they get to make money off of their name, their image, and their likeness. It's an NIL law. And it's been passed in Mississippi and Florida. I've been aware for some time that college and universities are making fortunes off of these young men that may be, in a way, sacrificing their years of their lives for the sport that they are loving to play. But the amounts that they could be paid can be significant. And, you know, it's going to be based on each player's popularity and their reach, how many games they're in, the burden of that. That's a whole new game.
Right. You know, and for most of the players, this is it. Most college players aren't going to go on to play professionally. If they're going to profit from their abilities, this is the time when they're going to.
Yeah, and everybody is making a fortune off these kids, you know, except for the kids themselves. I mean, it's been a really, it's been a ridiculous situation for a very long time. You know, this is a multi-billion dollar industry that's basically reliant on unpaid labor. And, you know, sure, they get a scholarship, but then you look at coaches making $5, $10 million a year. Even assistant coaches now, some of them are making seven figures. You know, everybody's getting paid except the players. The players deserve to be able to participate in that, I think. And it's a competitive issue, too. You're going to see a lot more states with these kinds of bills, I think, because if you have this kind of law, that's going to attract athletes. You know, for, you know, somebody like JT Daniel, I mean, this is a big deal. I envision some star Georgia players being in a lot of Kia commercials over the next few years. So
I think that's a really good point. And that's the point that Kemp emphasized, the effectiveness of this law to help recruitment athletes. So, but you know, there's this, some firm did an estimate on this and looked at it. And if they use the same criteria or the same amounts for professional that And really, the amounts can range up to 700,000, 400,000, and 5,000 to 30,000 for even less popular athletes that develop a following. And it puts a pressure on them that has not been there in the past. So how it affects the individual player will be very interesting, I think.
Let's touch on Mayor Gertz and the fact that he submitted his proposed budget to commissioners, and they're expected to vote on the plan on June 1st. Blake, let me ask you to give us some of the highlights of his proposal.
Sure, yeah. It's nothing huge, but a lot of smaller things in this budget. And I think it's kind of laying the groundwork for some bigger things that are going to happen here in the next few years. There had been some talk of raising property taxes because they've lost some sources of revenue during the pandemic, but that's not happening. They've gotten some federal funds that they're using to plug those holes in the budget. Transit will be fare free again, thanks to Joe Biden. It's going to stay that way. There are a lot of job training programs. One of the interesting things I thought was that Mayor Gertz is starting a cadet program to train police officers, for high school kids to train them to be police officers. And I think that has a lot of potential. One of the issues that I think we've had with our police here in Athens is the fact that we don't have a lot of police officers from Athens. We draw from a really, really wide radius, and we have a lot of our officers coming in from places that are a lot more conservative than Athens. And I think some of them don't really understand the community or even like the community because of our politics. So having some homegrown officers, I think, will help with that, and it will help with the diversity of the department as well. There are also raises for police officers, which I think is another thing that's going to help, because we don't pay our police officers very well. And that's part of the reason why we have to hire them from so far away. I think they started at about $27,000 or $28,000 a year. And so what happens is, as soon as they can, they start here and then they quit. They go work for, you know, someplace like Gwinnett County where they can make a lot more money. So we're not keeping the good ones.
And after all that training that they get.
Right. We train them for somebody else, and then they leave and they go to another department where they can make more money. Another thing that's a really small thing, but that's going to be a big thing a few years down the road, is there's money to do a wage study for county employees. There are about 1,700 people who work for Athens-Clarke County. It's one of the biggest employers in the city that is going to look at a $15 minimum wage. And that would only be for city employees because in Georgia, the state prohibits local governments from raising the minimum wage above what the state sets. But Athens-Clarke County can, of course, decide how much they pay the people who work for Athens-Clarke County. But that's a big thing, I think. And that's really going to set an example. When you have one of the biggest employers in the city paying $50 an hour, other employers are going to have to match that.
Well, we will end it there. We are out of time this week. I want to thank my guests, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG and Blake Aud from Flagpole Magazine.
All Things Considered has been there through controversial wars.
Thousands of young people came to Washington.
National disasters.
Challenger, go with throttle up.
The explosion in the clear blue Florida
and breakthrough
sky.
Moments.
Just let it sink in. An African-American president of the United States of America.
4 decades of bringing you the news on All Things Considered every afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Last week, we entered a conversation on colorism and hairism. As our national conversations on race have broadened to include more people of all races, researchers and advocates have increasingly found connections between discrimination and our institutional structures. Vanessa Gondlin is an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Georgia.
Discrimination based on your skin color or colorism is connected to so many aspects at the structural level, such as access to jobs and education, such as trends in prison sentencing. So when we're then thinking about this at the individual level, of course, as individuals, we are connected to the structures and the institutions that we're in.
Hairism is also connected to institutional structures. And as part of a course Gondlin is developing called colorism and hairism across communities of color, she will have students think about how to address colorism and hairism in terms of policy solutions.
And I'll, of course, give the example of the policy of the Crown Act, which is focusing on working against hair texture discrimination.
The Crown Act, or CROWN, stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. The bill's authors say that it will prohibit race-based hair discrimination in employment and educational opportunities based on hair texture or hairstyles. Similar measures are already law in 9 states. The Crown Act has been considered in Georgia, though it did not become law. However, local governments, like the Clayton County Commission, have passed ordinances making it illegal for certain entities to discriminate based on hair textures and hairstyles. While laws like the Crown Act address hairism, Gonlin also wants her students to think about policy solutions for colorism, and she feels students can begin now.
So I'm hoping that they'll be able to think about what they can do right now, as students right now, either in their friend groups or in their organizations.
Kristen Long is a doctoral student in the Department of Sociology at UGA and Gonlin's mentee.
On a structural level, I think we should start by stopping the policing of our aesthetic and things that we value within our culture that go along with our aesthetic, our hairstyles, which we tend to think are forms of expression, which are not synonymous with being unprofessional.
As Gonlin mentioned earlier, individuals are connected to structures and institutions. So in addition to addressing colorism on a policy level, it can also be addressed on an individual level. Here's LaPortia Thomas, a digital content creator and reporter for WXIA in Atlanta.
Why in the world does a law need to be passed to tell me that the hair on my head is okay? The only reason that law has to be passed is because so many people have said, "Ooh, well, you don't look the way I'm used to people looking."
Education can help, which brings us back to the course Gonlin's developing. Here's Thomas when asked what she thinks about a course offering like Gonlin's.
Just maybe this course will help you see when you are, you know, dismissing someone, because it's not always about being mean. It's about not seeing them, right? Don't save me, see me. Sometimes if you just arm people with the right knowledge, you don't have to worry about saving someone, right? If you can just see them, then you will know how to respond to whatever situation.
Gonlin reminds us, we have power as individuals.
There's a certain amount of power that we have. And then we could also potentially push for there to be changes if we're thinking more as a collective group as well.
Athens and North Georgia don't have a local TV station, and that can prove especially detrimental in cases of severe weather, like what we saw earlier this week. But some students from the University of Georgia's Atmospheric Science program are working to fix that. In between covering the recent tornadoes that blew through the state this week, some of those students took the time to speak with Athens News Matters about the challenges and the opportunities that come along with being one of Athens' only local meteorologists. Welcome to the show, Jared Shelton and Will O'Neill.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be on.
So I'll start with you, Jared. Can you give some background on how this site, Athens, Georgia Weather, came to be and what made you want to be a part of it?
Long before I came to the University of Georgia, some former atmospheric sciences students started up this platform on social media, and it was on Facebook. And it grew substantially before I arrived in 2018. And once I did, I got wind of this and saw it as an outlet to dabble in broadcast meteorology and really just practice in front of the camera.
How about you, William?
Yeah, so I came a year after Jared, and I didn't even want to go into broadcast meteorology first, but former student Lance Blocker actually pushed me to do a video for this page. And then from there, I grew and wanted to go into broadcast meteorology more. And then more and more through this year, I've developed an even bigger passion for it.
Well, as we mentioned in the opening, you guys are UGA students. So how do you manage to balance your life as a student with the unpredictability of covering the weather? Jared?
The weather doesn't care about our schedules or anybody's schedules for that matter. So really, I've just gotten used to, in the background, in the back of my mind, the weather is always a thought. And sometimes stuff begins to develop in an untimely manner. And you just have to get yourself together and get there as best you can. And it also helps to have a team of people like we do now to kind of rely on each other when some of us may not be available. But I consider it just really an exercise for the future, because that's always going to be the case with the weather.
Will?
Yeah, I agree with Jared. Having the team to help out is great when there's a lot of stuff going on with school-wise, especially this week with finals and then severe weather also happening. Time management is also a big thing. Getting work done early when you see there is severe weather coming in to make sure you have time to cover the situation and also get all your work done to get through all your classes.
Now, it's my understanding that during the Noonan storm, you both stayed up into the night live streaming and provided information on the tornado that ultimately saved a family's life from a tree that fell on their house. Tell us what that was like.
That was the first time I'd ever gone on live. And it started out west of Georgia in Alabama, and then they got warned in Georgia. So we finally went live. And then we covered it for about 20 minutes or so. And then it finally got upgraded to a tornado emergency for downtown Noonan. And from there, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then once it passed through Noonan, I think I'd been on for about 50 minutes at that point, and Jared finally took over at that point.
So Jared, pick it up right there.
Yeah, it was a pretty high intensity situation. And it was also, it almost caught me off guard a little bit, the intensity of like how quickly and rapidly it developed. Because earlier that day, I had covered some severe weather in Northwest Georgia that didn't actually materialize into any significant tornadoes. And then all of a sudden, we see this debris ball, which is huge. And just, it was a high intensity situation. And I was happy to take over for Will. And I think our number one priority the whole time, as soon as we saw that debris ball, especially on the correlation coefficient, was this is serious. This has nothing to do with us. We just have to get this information out as best we can.
That was Jared Shelton and William O'Neill of Athens, Georgia Weather. Guys, thanks for stopping by Athens News Matters today.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Concerts, electronic, classical, and otherwise, have been a thing of the past for quite some time now, thanks to the pandemic. But what if you had access to a variety of free, newly composed pieces at your fingertips? Athens News Matters' Jessica Wurst tells us more about the Soundwalk Project at the State Botanical Garden of Georgia and how it can enhance your next trip to the garden.
Walking through the State Botanical Garden of Georgia, you'll hear trees swaying around as the wind blows and leaves crunching as wildlife scurries by. But now, you have access to another soundtrack.
Think of like a soundtrack for your journey through a space that is located in your phone and triggered by a GPS locating application.
That's Andre Luz, the University of Georgia graduate student that spearheaded the Soundwalk Project.
As you move through a space, certain places are assigned specific pieces of music, pieces of electronic sound that is evocative of the space around you, the immediate space around you. And as you traverse from one space to another, as the space changes, so will the soundtrack. So the sound experience that you will observe is really dependent upon how long you stay in a space and when you decide to change areas and move to a new one.
This sound installation is made possible by Luz, along with other members from the UGA Student Composers Association, who crafted original pieces to create an immersive experience for you. Here's Luz with an example of what it sounds like, using fellow composer Sam Hoyland's piece.
So let's say Sam has the shade garden with the wonderful canopy of the forest in the garden. His sound will be a certain piece of music that evokes that space.
As you walk past the Shade Garden and into the Children's Garden, you'll hear a work by Associate Professor of Composition, Peter Lane.
If you walk through the actual garden area where all the plants are, and then, you know, the GPS will turn on the piece that I did with, you know, some of my kids speaking mixed in there. And then as you walk towards the playground area, you'll hear Caitlin's track turn on.
The Caitlin that he just mentioned is Caitlin Santos, undergraduate student and an extremely talented composer. Here's her piece in the Children's Garden entitled Fortress.
You know, in these forts for kids, like, this is like someone's rocket ship. This is someone's house. This is, you know, it could be anything, anything that you want it to be as a kid. And so I wanted to give the piece kind of this wonder, this feeling that, oh, I'm in space. I'm just in my own world, kind of taking the listener outside of where they are right now.
Santos says that every piece of music was intentionally composed for the listener's enjoyment, and the project itself was created for us, garden visitors.
This is dedicated to you. This is dedicated to the listener. It's because you guys have opened up your home to thousands and thousands of college students. And so I at least owe you guys a piece of my music. And it's just because I love Athens so much. And so thank you to the audience and to the listener.
Andre Luz agrees and says this uplifting experience works to bring us together even during difficult times.
It only helps to speak to the idea that that the human creative spirit can still continue even though we may be experiencing some challenging hurdles. And I hope that this project brings some peace and inspiration to those who need it. Even in a simple way, I think it could bring people together and give people some hope.
As long as you have the Echoes app downloaded to your phone, that's ECHOES, all capital letters, you'll have access to the Soundwalk indefinitely. But even our favorite songs can get repetitive once they've been on repeat for a while. Peter Lane from the School of Music, however, says that won't be a problem here.
We have the ability to switch in and out music, so I think that we might kind of, you know, as we hit the fall semester, maybe we'll switch out some pieces, maybe we'll change some things and try to keep it fresh in case people want to go back and do it again and hear something different.
After opening the Echoes app, be sure to either scan the QR code at the Gardens Visitor Center or type in tinyurl.com/UGA Soundwalk. We also have detailed instructions on our website at wuga.org. For Athens News Matters, I'm Jessica Wurst.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
You know that feeling where you're exhausted by the news, but you also can't stay away from the news? I am here to help with that. My name is Sam Sanders. My show is called It's Been a Minute. Every week, journalists and I process the week of news and culture in a way that doesn't feel overwhelming. Listen to It's Been a Minute every week from NPR.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. Athens-based post-punk band Vision Video released their debut album last month. And as our critic at large, John Slight, says, it's a treat for those of us who have a soft spot for 80s synth pop and new wave sounds.
Alternative rockers Vision Video arrive on the scene with their debut album Inked in Red. Led by vocalist Dustin Gannon, an Army veteran who served in Afghanistan, this band has created a decidedly un-Athens-sounding record, with influences rooted heavily in some of the darker British new wave, synth-pop, and post-punk music of the late 1970s and 1980s. The album opens with In My Side, an up-tempo rocker that would be right at home on an Echo and the Bunnymen record. Gannon croons, "I can feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side." Comfort in the Grave is the lead single from Inked in Red. Keyboardist Emily Friedock gets the nod on vocals for the song, and her voice suits the dark, angsty nature of the tune. The entire record achieves levels of angst that would be right at home on a Smiths or Cure album. Friedock's vocals are highly reminiscent of Susie Sue, the lead singer of Susie and the Banshees. That band's influence is quite prevalent on Comfort in the Grave. You're listening to Organized Murder, another highlight on Inked in Red. It's pure post-punk in all its glory, with great lyrical content to boot. Blood Money slips through our fingers even after all these years. Forever on patrol, feed the machine with your fears. Bassist Dan Geller contributes a fantastic bass line as well, giving the song's low end some muscle. Earlier, I mentioned the darkness and Sturm und Drang of the band's lyrics, and the affinity they share with some of the best stuff from the band The Cure. Run is a dark yet up-tempo song featuring dueling vocals and perhaps the most direct nod to Robert Smith and his groundbreaking band. Run is moody, yes, but the strong hook means this song would be right at home in a stadium or an intimate club. Vision Video's debut album, Inked in Red, harkens back to the days of classic alternative music. It's a fresh take on post-punk and new wave, with great songwriting throughout. If you enjoy bands like The Fix, Susie and the Banshees, Pylon, and Joy Division, then you'll find Inked in Red to be a highly pleasurable album, start to finish. Athens News Matters, I'm John Slights.
Finally today, a tribute to one of Georgia's most important exports. Not timber or peanuts or even blueberries. All of those are important, but I'm talking about something fizzier.
Saturday marks the 135th birthday of Coca-Cola. The year was 1886, and the place was Atlanta. On that day, Dr. John Pemberton lugged a jug of the sweet syrup down the street to Jacob's Pharmacy, where carbonated water was added, and the rest, as they say, is history.
135 years ago, a Coke would cost you just a nickel, and for that first year, sales of Coca-Cola were, well, kind of flat, if you'll pardon the joke. Pemberton's brew averaged just 9 sales per day.
Compare that to now, when, according to Business Insider, around 10,000 Coke products are consumed every second.
So, of course, Coca-Cola the drink and Coca-Cola the company have been wildly successful. Unfortunately, things didn't go so well for Dr. Pemberton. Over time, he sold off pieces of his business to others, and just 2 years or so after the first Coke was poured, Pemberton was out of the cola game. But the drink he invented continued to grow into a worldwide behemoth and one of the most recognizable global brands.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Our producers are Martin Matheny, Jean Davis, Megan Wan, Jessica Wurst, Lucas Trevor, Devin Zwald, and Isabella Liu. Our digital producers are Robin Whetstone and Emma Turner. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia.
As always, you can check out today's stories on our website at wuga.org or on the NPR One app. You can also catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And of course, we're always happy to hear from you by email at wuga@uga.edu. For Alexia Ridley, I'm Chris Shoup, reminding you to stay safe and stay informed. We'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy your weekend and stay with us throughout the week for all the latest news from WUGA, GPB, and NPR.